Welcome in, everybody, to the best in true crime talk radio. This is True Crime Tuesday. I'm Tim Dennis. Got a good show for you today. Normally we're talking about serial killers, rapists, the hardcore criminal stuff. But today I want to get into a little bit of white collar crime. And I want to get into something that a lot of you might have been a victim of and not even known it. Or maybe you've known it and been frustrated by it. And normally we talk about this around the holidays, but a lot of you are getting hit with it now and you're being surprised by it. And that is online scams and con artists that are getting you when you're getting things delivered to you. Things like that. My guest today is William Francavilla, who has a book out there called The Madoffs Among Us, Combat the Scammers, Con Artists, and Thieves Who Are Plotting to Steal Your Money. And we're going to go through some of these online scams that really have got people. And I got personally a few years ago, and it was a mess, I'll tell you. And we'll talk about that a little bit with Bill here as we bring him in. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the True Crime Tuesday, William Francavilla. Hey, Bill, I should call you Bill, right? Not William?
Bill is fine, Tim. Bill is fine. Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation. I'm always happy to speak to people who are willing to listen to this very dangerous entanglement wherein oftentimes we find ourselves.
I don't know if you're familiar with this program called Black Market that's on Vice.
Uh-huh.
But I was watching it the other day. And it's really a striking program in that it goes inside these different criminal organizations. But it tries to show you from a different point of view what goes on. But Michael K. Williams is the host of this program. And in doing this, he actually gets inside how things are done. And he was going through the inside of an online scammers organization. And he was breaking it down. He said it breaks down into three parts, which I thought was fascinating. When he was doing the phishing scam part of it, he was talking about how you have the person who actually makes the contact and gets the information from someone. Then it has to be cleared to a second part and then a third part, and how the three parts can't operate without one another.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so complex yet simple. And he talked about how back when, because he's a reformed criminal and reformed drug addict, which is how he kind of gets into these organizations. I mean, he used to be in the game, now he's out of the game. So he's got these contacts that help him get back in to chronicle all this. Yeah, very interesting. And in that, it's interesting how fast people will give up their information. I got to ask you, Bill, why is it we're so trusting, first of all, to somebody on the other line, other end of a phone or the other end of the internet to want to give up our info?
Tim, that is such a foundational question, and there's no one single answer, but there's a general explanation. For the most part, you and I and so many of your listeners, we choose to trust. We choose to try to understand. We choose to try to be kind, at least polite, with whomever we're working with. The bad guys, on the contrary, are out to steal. They're out to receive our most personal information so that they can have access to our wealth. They have no heart. They have no conscience. And I think the most dangerous intersection in America is the intersection between subtlety and naivete. I call them the twin towers of deception. The bad guys are very subtle. They're very good at what they do. And it's a highly, highly profitable endeavor, if we dare even call it as endeavor. I mean, there's practically no overhead other than phone charges and phone lines or access to an internet. And naivete, because we're good folks, we oftentimes succumb to being a little naive, maybe a lot naive. And at that intersection, when the bad guy meets the most vulnerable among us, that naive person, robbery is going to take place. Mm-hmm. And you were referencing how orchestrated this can be throughout the globe. I mean, this is a global issue, and so many of the organizations orchestrate themselves from overseas. That's why oftentimes there's a foreign accent on the other side. That, well, I get it. Where are they calling from? Are they here in America? Or do they truly represent the FBI or the Sheriff's Department or whoever they're pretending to be or what? It was an organization that was put together in Mumbai, India. And this bad guy, he went by the nickname of Shaggy. Before he was uncovered by the Indian police with the able assistance of the FBI, he took over $300 million of Americans' money. And it was, you know, your stereotypical scam. Mm-hmm. You call pretending to be the IRS, and you, unless you're in arrears, $1,500 or $15,000, Tim, unless you pay us, we are going to dispatch sheriff's deputies to your home and they're going to come and arrest you. That's very alarming to a person who is naive, less sophisticated. Maybe they're older and they have some cognitive issues, but they were able to rob $300 million. They took it right out of people's checkbooks. So it can be a one-off type of situation, or it can be highly, highly organized, such as in this particular situation. So, what I love about being interviewed throughout the country is getting the message out there that anybody can be scammed. In fact, oftentimes it's the brightest among us who stand to lose the most money and do lose the most money. We can only submit the many, many instances that Bernie Madoff stole from very wealthy, very, very smart people and organizations. How did he do it? Subtlety and naivete.
Talk to me, and his was a multi-level marketing scheme, but still, Bernie got away with a lot of money. Tell me a little bit. There's a difference, yeah. I think, too, between dreaming big and getting money taken away from you. Let's talk a little bit about the dreaming big part of it first, because and I want to compare Bernie Madoff's scheme with what we find in our emails, for example. Mm-hmm. Sure. With Bernie Madoff and his multi, and that was a high priced multi-level marketing scheme. But let's start first with emails. We all have email. Okay. We all open our email. Mm-hmm. And in there, I mean, we probably get emails from our favorite stores, or we get emails from, loved ones or work emails, or we're getting a cornucopia of different emails that we get throughout the day. But occasionally we get that one. And mm-hmm. you know it's junk, but it sounds a little too good to be true. And you're like, mm-hmm. man, that really sounds attractive. Maybe it's a work from home. It's an opportunity that you just can't pass up, or, hey, you know what? It's an opportunity to make an investment and just click on this video, watch this video. And you watch the video, it's a half hour long and everything in it sounds pretty solid and you want to go along with that. But tell us, Bill, why that's not as good as it seems.
Please remember that fear and greed are the two primary motivators when it comes to these enticing offers. You're afraid of missing out, or you're afraid if you don't act, you're going to get in trouble. Or to your point, it's greed. It's like, oh my goodness, this almost sounds too good to be true. Just 2 days ago, I received an email and it looked pretty darn official. It was from a internet security company, a name that we would all recognize. Mm-hmm. And I don't have an account with them, but it said, your You will be billed in the next 2 hours $450 for continued service to, and they named the company. I said, what the heck is this? I don't even do business with these people. I don't have a contract with them. What account are they going to pull it from? So here's my advice to our listeners, Tim. You take a deep breath and you say, this is scaring me a little bit. I'm alarmed. I didn't expect it. So I bounced out of the email without opening any attachment, and I Googled scams relative to this company. And sure enough, it came up very quickly. Don't get sucked in. This is a scam. They're going to try to bill you for $400 to $500. It does nothing. They have no contractual obligation with you, nor you with them. Just ignore it. So I did. Now, I'm the guy that wrote the book. I'm the guy that has spent the last 30 years in financial services witnessing so many of these problems. And I thought, is this true? Do I indeed have one of these accounts? I admit it. I'm human. It wasn't until I was able to verify that it truly was a scam that I was able to save myself, honestly. So they're coming at us fast and furious. One real important item that everyone should pay attention to. Maybe it looks like the Amazon logo, and maybe it looks like the Amazon email, but there's one. Maybe there's a period after the Z, or maybe it's Amazon at some other address. Looks pretty official. And they're emailing our friends, neighbors, and ourselves, and they're saying, we need to bring your account up to speed. We need some further information. Please provide us with your preferred method of payment on future purchases, for instance. Mm-hmm. And we go, okay, it's coming from Amazon. Sure, here's my credit card number, and here's the expiration date. No. Amazon's not going to ask you to do that. When somebody receives an Amazon or a Target or a Chick-fil-A or any number of highly recognizable businesses requesting some information, 9 times out of 10, and maybe it's closer to 10 times out of 10, is someone trying to steal one of two things, your money or your information, so they can steal your money. Stop, take a deep breath, Google, get out of that email and Google what's going on with Amazon. I received, and you will be amazed at the number of people who have addressed this in the past, and we can learn from their experience. And we just choose to ignore it. If you and I could think of a scam today, and you and I could put together a plan whereby, you know, if we were a real dastardly type of people and we had a criminal mind, we could start making phone calls or issuing emails, or we put up a website promising things that are all false. And guess what happens? Revenue happens. People are taken in. They're excited. They're saying, oh my goodness, this is a terrific opportunity. Geez, if I just send them $1,500, they promise that my return is going to be 100% within 6 months or a month or what have you. We get taken in. If it sounds too good to be true, guess what? It probably is. So, boy, it's caveat emptor, buyer beware. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that there are so many criminally minded people out there who are only so happy and only so willing to rob people who so many times can't ill afford to lose any money. And boy, I've got so many stories of people, especially older Americans,
yeah,
where they have a nest egg, and the bad guys infiltrate that nest egg and they run away with everything. And there's not a thing you can do about it. The bank's not going to back you. The money's gone.
Talk about that a little bit, because I think we're under the assumption that because, and I think criminals are also under the assumption that because it's an innocent, quote unquote, innocent crime, that when they go in and they take the money out of an account, that financial institutions will back that. Tell us why financial institutions won't necessarily back that.
It really depends. If our credit card is stolen, for instance, and people are using our credit card, there is a max. It's $50 that they can be that they can charge against us. But a debit card, for instance, and mm-hmm. that is what the bad guys are after. Debit card, there is no protection. So if you've got $5,000 in a checking account, for instance, and they have access to your debit card, that $5,000 could very well be gone. It's also one of the reasons that the bad guys are going to ask for gift cards or some other means of payment. Maybe it's a certified check that's mailed to a certain or a wire transfer. Those are not protected to the extent a credit card is. And there can be an awful lot of damage done to a person's credit and their credit cards before it's found out. So the money might be gone. It might be gone for several months or even beyond that. Maybe it's found out. Maybe it's not. But dangerous stuff. Dangerous stuff. Let's not depend on the banks to back us up. And here's another thing. Let's not depend upon any judicial system to back us up. Law enforcement, as terrific a job as they do, the system of laws, as punitive as they are, trying to discourage the bad guys, guess what? The money's gone. That always comes after. So we want to hold on to what we have as best we can, Tim.
Now, Bill, the other thing that a lot of these online scammers are looking for, as you said, is information. Let our audience know why exactly that leak of information. And I think we get bombarded by the news a lot. Well, another leak here, another company's had a breach of information here. It seems like it's commonplace, and it's getting a little too commonplace. Why it's so dangerous? What can these scammers do with this information more than just they have your information?
They can weasel their way into our wealth. And a couple of points that are very noteworthy. The first is be so careful on social media. I mean, it's fun to present information and ask questions on Facebook, for instance, or LinkedIn to provide people with information. But the bad guys are going to use that information to trick you. In other words, I warn my friends and family who I happen to be connected with on Facebook, because you're going to get a question that sounds something like, what is one thing that your home state is known for? Tell us what song was popular the year you were born. Tell us your pet's first name. Those are all keyholes to information that the miscreants can use. Mm-hmm. Your pet's first name. How many people have their first pet's name as their password? I mean, a lot of people do. And the scammers are out there trying to, again, gain access to our most personal information. So the social media, whenever I see these things, here, solve this problem and tell me about something that went on in your childhood, or would you marry your spouse all over again, and all these things, refrain. You do not have to participate. You're not going to offend anyone. Just back off. My niece was sponsoring an event around Christmas time, and it was called Secret Santa, something like that. Well, that's nothing more or less than an illegal way to capture information and funds as well, because it was asking people to fund a nonprofit or sponsor a family that was in trouble and so on and so forth. But No, it wasn't. The FBI knows that this is a scam, and it pops up on Facebook.
Now, that brings up an excellent point, too. Before you post or repost something on Facebook, you really should research it first and really get an idea of what it is you're getting into.
Do you know what I do on Facebook? I personally wish people happy birthday when it comes up that it happens to be their birthday, or I will like some achievement, but that's about the extent of it. I do not type anything unless absolutely I'm convinced it's absolutely safe to anybody, friend or family member, even my kids. I'm not going to do that. It's way, way, way too dangerous. There's one thing that, if I might please,
sure.
I might point this out to your listeners, because did you remember the guy who played Catch Me If You Can, the scam artist? He pretended to be a pilot. He pretended to be a physician, an attorney. It was portrayed by Leonardo DiCaprio, and really a fascinating story. The movie was very entertaining. I heard him speak, and I ran up to him after his presentation, and I said, "What's the one piece of advice that you can give to me so that I can give to others relative to making certain that their information is secure?" Without hesitation, he said, "Credit freeze. Freeze your credit reporting." And I investigated what a credit freeze is. It's a very simple process. We've got three credit bureaus out there that monitor and grade our credit worthiness and so on and so forth. You know, it's the Equifax and the other two, TransUnion. You go on their websites and you request a credit freeze. Costs nothing. Takes about 5 minutes to do. You have to do it with each individual reporting company, and you request that your credit reports be frozen. Now, the brilliance behind this is the scammers, they can gain access to your credit report and some of your very personal information. But if you have a credit freeze, they can't do it. And if you're married, you have to do it, and your wife also has to do it separately. The only stipulation is if you are applying for a credit card or a mortgage or an auto loan, you have to get in touch with each of the bureaus and unfreeze your credit for an hour or for 24 hours and then get back. No cost, a very modest inconvenience, and it's so infrequent, but it stands in the way of a lot of people grabbing some of your most personal information. So if we could present your listeners with any one single piece of counsel, it would be investigate a credit freeze and see if it's appropriate for you and your family.
Yeah, that's absolutely great advice. I think a lot of us kind of drift alone in that huge ocean of doubt and fear when it comes to a lot of this. I think we get bombarded daily with news of not only credit breaches in different companies that we all use, but we also get bombarded with news of the dark web. I think the dark web is this cloud that hangs over us that we sometimes look up at and think that we're absolutely powerless to fight a lot of this.
And you are absolutely correct. You know, one of the demographics that is particularly vulnerable, because maybe older Americans, maybe living by themselves for the first time, maybe having lost a spouse, again, maybe with some cognitive issues, loneliness. And I've seen this in my business in the financial services industry, as well as just generally. We think that they are the most vulnerable, and they are exceedingly vulnerable. But the demographic that has the biggest challenge relative to online scams, actually the Gen X's, the millennials, because they spend so much time on their devices that they're always there, and they're always looking, and they're always being accessed, and they open up an attachment, and they're enticed. With your permission, I'd like to spend a little more time on the older population.
Sure, but
because women typically live a little bit longer than their spouses typically, and I found my own mother in this situation, as well as so many other older women whom I helped with their finances throughout the years. The bad guys know that they're living by themselves and maybe they're not accustomed to these decisions. So they're just trying to scare the heck out of them. When my sister-in-law, my wife's older sister, lost her husband, within a week, she received a phone call from someone purporting to be with the IRS, and you are delinquent by $1,700. You must pay this immediately, otherwise we're going to send the police to your home. Now, poor Elaine, you can imagine how emotionally traumatized she was, first with the loss of her husband, of course, but then with a phone call such as this. The bad guys saw the obituary and said, here's an interesting target. Let's call this woman. Mm-hmm. Now, Elaine wisely called her local police department, who were courteous enough to dispatch a cruiser, knocked on the door, calmed her down, said, don't worry, this is just a scam. We're going to be here, and we're going to circle the block several times over the next couple of days. You have nothing to worry about. Good for them, to their credit. That's community service. But if it happened to Elaine, can you imagine the number of times it happens throughout the day? My goodness. My mother always had the best response. She said, my son takes care of all my financial matters. Here, I'll give you his phone number. You can call him. Now, Tim, you can imagine how many times I was called. Exactly zero.
Exactly.
But it was perfect. It was perfect. It's not a bad ploy. My son, my daughter, my nephew handles my, you can call him and ask him if this is appropriate for me. It's over. Game is done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, because then you're dealing with somebody who's on their level, and they're not going to fight that person, obviously. They're looking for the easy mark.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. I tell you what, Bill, let's take our break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some other things that may affect the elderly as well. I want to get into some sweepstakes and some lottery scams and talk about some other things that may sway the elderly. And then I also want to talk about some investment scams as well. There's some things out there that affect the old and the young that I think are kind of sucking us all in. I think in this time where inflation is up so much, I think we're all looking for a way to make more money. And I think the online stuff is an easy target, or we're being targeted very easily. Our guest today is William Frank Avila. The book is The Madoffs Among Us, Combat the Scammers, Con Artists, and Thieves Who Are Plotting to Steal Your Money. And William, we're talking a little bit about things that can affect us as far as money goes. And money is a big thing right now, especially with inflation. The costs of things are getting bigger. We're looking for more money to come into the household. And I think people are looking for fast money, especially how we get more money in and how we can afford more things. And I think pie in the sky dreaming also comes along with getting more money into the household. One of the things, you know, the FBI released a list of the 10 top scams at the end of 2021. It was in December of 2021. And what people were kind of biting on, one of those things was sweepstakes and lottery scams. And I can think of a few of them right off the bat. You generally get either hit in your email or you get hit with different lottery scams. And I know that affects not only the elderly, but it affects, you know, Gen Xers as well. Also younger people. I think we all want to think that we're going to hit it rich, but speak to me a little bit about that. What is it about the fascination of thinking that we're going to hit that quick, and how easy is it for these scammers to get our money on that and never get paid off and think that they can chalk it up just to, oh, you just happened to lose the lottery and that's it?
I can give you a very specific example. A friend of mine was speaking with his elderly mother, who was widowed, and she called her son and she said, we're rich. And her son said, tell me, what's going on, Mom? Said, well, I just won a lottery. And all I need to do is pay the taxes in advance, so I'm going to write them a check and wire it over to them. However, they had negotiated the payment. And in return, I'm going to get you know, $1 million or 250, whatever the amount was. And he said, Mom, stop it. It's a scam. And his mother said, no, it's not. No, they sounded very nice on the phone. I truly won this lottery. Nothing could convince her. Fortunately, her son was went over there and took the appropriate course of action. It said, Mom, I would like to be alerted when any check leaves your bank account. I would like to have oversight over your finances. I don't want your money. I'm not going to take your money, but let's sit down together. Let's go to the bank and let's make sure it's okay for me to review all of your transactions just to make sure some of this all of it is 100% correct. They spoke to the banker, who reinforced the fact that it was indeed a scam. The son, the dutiful son, was apprised of all transactions, and he was able to keep Mom on the straight and narrow. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay. I think it's a genuine act of kindness to look in on our older relatives, whether it's our grandparents, our parents, an elderly aunt or uncle, doesn't matter. Hey, Papa, how you doing? Do you have any new friends? We receive a lot of offers that seem too good to be true. Do you ever get these offers? And just let them talk. During the day, do people call you on your landline? Well, what do they want? What do they say? You know, Papa, with your permission, let me, you and I spend some time every month reviewing your accounts just to make sure there's nothing that is unusual. And please promise me before you make any major purchase that we're going to talk about it. I have a dear uncle who passed a few years ago at age 90. We had to take his cognitive abilities were greatly diminished, and he couldn't drive any longer. The Commonwealth of Virginia took his license away from him because he kept on hitting cars.
Oh, no.
Not a good thing.
No.
Yeah. Everybody was okay, but, you know, it just wasn't going to work. So they took his license away. He received a postcard. This one came via the regular mail that said, we want to warranty your 1999 Toyota Corona, whatever it was, just give us send your check. He didn't own a car, but he bought the insurance, the warranty. He also didn't own a computer, but he had received a notification that they could warrant all repairs to any of his devices. So he bought it. Now, God bless him. I mean, you know, we're all going to get old, hopefully, and
yeah,
we're going to lose a little bit of our minds. You know, we're going to need some help. Well, the younger generation, the sons, the daughters, the grandchildren, I think it's part of our responsibility to help this demographic make the right decisions, right, because they're getting bombarded with these scam artists.
Absolutely. And if I can, Bill, I mean, it even comes down to let's just say the mothers and fathers out there that are of an advanced age too. If you have a social media presence and you're of an, let's just say a middle age or an older age, the latest scam now is to have an anonymous person hit you up in your inbox and ask for your Cash App tag. And, mm-hmm, and, you know, hey, I want to drop a couple $1,000 in your Cash App account. Do you have one?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you know, yeah, and you're thinking, wow, I could really use a couple $1,000s right now. And it's, right, oh, okay, right, well, all I need is, you know, like $96 or $69, or however much it is to cover the government cost to do this. That's all I need. And then I'll turn around and I'll repay the favor. And I swear it's not a scam. Here's my driver's license to show you that I am who I am. And here you go. And I'll drop that money in there. I swear it's not a ruse. It's not a scam. I'll absolutely,
yep,
do it.
Yep. Pretty compelling.
Yeah.
And again, to our former point, we trust people and we want to trust people. we are well-intended. Not everybody is. And there's a pleasant voice on the other side of the other end of the phone line, perhaps. And we believe them.
Yeah.
And that's very, very dangerous.
That is incredibly.
You mentioned something about work at home. Mm-hmm. Scams.
Yep.
That's a pretty good one. You can be a secret shopper. All you have to do is visit your local Walmart. We're going to pay you $200 a week, $200 a month. We need your checking account number so that we can wire the funds there. Oh, come on. That should be obvious, but it sounds pretty enticing. And son of a gun, who couldn't use a couple $100 per month more? And unsuspecting, well, it sounds right. It's got the Walmart logo on this offer. I guess it's okay. It's not okay. It's not. People are not going to give money away. They expect something in return. And I guess the old adage, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And so much of that really is so true in our discussion today.
Well, let me ask you this, Bill. Is there such a thing, because our audience is going to want to know, is there such a thing as a true work-from-home job like that? Can you really, truly make a decent living from home? Now, keep in mind, we're extracting companies that are paying people to work from home because of the pandemic.
That's right. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah, there's so many honorable avenues wherein we can continue to be employed, and we have the maybe advantage of working from home. But if you're getting hit up on the internet, if you're getting hit up with a phone call with a company that you're unsure of, or coming from a company that you have little confidence, do yourself a favor. Investigate. And by that, I mean, put everything on hold, take a deep breath, Google Walmart secret shoppers. And I'm picking on Walmart. It could be Target. It could be any number of companies. I mean, Walmart, do they have secret shoppers? Sure they do. Of course they do. Do they enlist their people via the internet in a blind fashion? No, they don't. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee once you investigate, you're going to be amazed, and people are going to go, oh my goodness, what did I almost get myself into? Because those monies are gone.
Yeah, very much so. The other thing that attracts people, I mean, not just the lure of quick money or sweepstakes or even the shop at home or I'm sorry, secret shop or work at home scams. Let's face it, things are expensive out there to buy. Consumer goods, clothing, electronics, shoes, purses. There are legitimate sites out there, Overstock.com, places where you can get great buys, and you can get, you know, secondhand clothing or consumer goods that are legit, that you can get significant money knocked off. But yet, you get the websites that are out there, you know, Timberland boots for only $29, and it's got like Timberland.us or something like that. Or you've got, you know, Nike.us or something where it's a little too good to be true. And a pair of shoes that should be $159 is only $29. Or, you know, you can get, my favorite is the NFL jerseys or the NBA jerseys or, you know, the Major League Baseball jerseys that are normally hundreds of dollars for just $29 or $39. Tell me a little bit about the counterfeit products or the products that are made overseas that it seems like people want to jump on in order right away because I can get this cheap and I can still maintain status.
Well, the knockoffs and what I heard you say, the offers that are too good to be true, oftentimes they come through social media sites such as Facebook, and you'll see something that's advertised, and you say, oh my goodness, geez, I was just shopping Amazon for the identical piece of equipment or piece of clothing, and it was five times more expensive. It sounds too good to be true. Before you hit the buy button, again, back out and Google Nike.us. Are they legitimate? And watch what happens, because so many people, fortunately or unfortunately, have come before us, have been scammed before us, and are very, very willing and able to warn the rest of us. Sounds too good to be true? Let's check it out. You know one of the best ways to check it out? Google it. Google it. Yeah. Well, I know we're still on the internet, but you're not going to call your neighbor to see if he or she has been scammed by this company. But the World Wide Web is ready to do battle with these people and will alert you to the fact that it is indeed a scam. So again, buyer beware. And if it sounds too good to be true, probably is. Probably is. You know, it's one of the reasons that I and my wife, we prefer to do business with the big names, the reliable companies. You know, the Amazons, the Targets, the Walmarts, the companies that we've been doing business with for years. They certify their delivery. They tell you when it's going to be there. They tell you the exact amount. They warrant the items that have been delivered. Who's has a better policy than Amazon? If something doesn't come through, you just put it back in a bag and send it off to them with no shipping charge, and they are going to credit your account. Those companies, I feel a very high degree of confidence and safety with. But it's the one-offs, the ones that look almost real, but they're not real. Similar to the security system that they were going to charge me $450 for, and I said, "Oh my God, that's their logo, isn't it? How do I?" Nope. They didn't get me that time. And believe me, I think I'm a pretty smart guy. Tim, you're a pretty smart guy, mm-hmm. And so many of your listeners. Very bright. And we don't think we can be scammed. And therein lies the crux of the matter. Therein lies the danger. There was a very famous scam artist. His name was Simon Lovell. He was kind of popular in the 60s and 70s, made a ton of money, got found out, was sent to jail, did his time. He came out and decided that he was going to speak and write about scam artists. And someone posed the question, I'm too smart. You can't scam me. And he said, he's quoted as saying, I love it when people tell me that they can't be conned, because in my mind, they're halfway to being conned, unquote.
Yeah.
So he would just, in what is manifest and highly recognized, Bernie Madoff. You know, he made off literally with $65 billion of very smart, very wealthy people's monies. He got away with it for a period until everything imploded. He just couldn't sustain it. His was a typical Ponzi scheme. He would, when people wanted to get out of his investments, he would pay them with new money that came in. But people felt that if you were doing business with Bernie, you were privileged. He would oftentimes, at his very elite country clubs and surroundings and so on, he would oftentimes say, you know, I don't think you are right for me. I'd be happy to help you, but it's just not going to work out. And he would exclude people from becoming clients of his. Well, that only built his reputation to a much higher extent. People felt that they were honored and privileged to be doing business with Bernie Madoff. So really classic scam. Unbelievable. I wrote to him several times when he was doing his time at the federal penitentiary in Butner, North Carolina. I wanted to get down and interview him. I sent him a copy of my book, and you know, I flattered him at first, and finally I said, hey, what do you got to lose? At some extent, maybe you could work toward apology or vindication. Let me come down and tell your story from another perspective. Never heard anything from him. Well, he's gone, and good riddance to him.
So let me ask you this. If you would have gotten an interview with Bernie, what what would you have asked him? I mean, how would you have attacked it if you wanted to go from a different perspective?
You know, I was so curious, and I've read so many accounts of his life and who he was and how he started and so on and so forth. I would want to get into the minds of the people that he conned. Bernie, how in the world were you able to gain this person's confidence? How in the world could a money manager with several $100 million under management be persuaded to give you 20% of their holdings? How in the world, an organization or a nonprofit that is conducted with under the auspices of a very formidable board of directors, how in the world were you able to persuade them? I really wanted to know that. I think I know the answer because it was all smoke and mirrors and fabrication of reports. But thank goodness there was one very, very bright guy from a think tank and a money management firm up in Massachusetts. His name was Harry Markopoulos. He was a chartered financial analyst with Rampart Investments, whose company had money with Bernie, and he started doing some really deep digs on the math. Mm-hmm. And he went back to his people and he said, this is impossible. There is no way he could be having these types of returns. And the company fortuitously took all their money away. And Harry went to the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, and said, this guy's a fraud. And nobody believed him.
Huh.
So, I mean, it took that depth of investigation for just one guy to kind of blow the whistle on the whole thing. But I would have been, I guess, by reputation, he wasn't a very nice guy, Bernie. He was kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
And he started scamming people as a teenager. You know, he had a pool cleaning business, and he would charge outrageous prices and do half the job and then just leave. So he's been a troubled person all his life.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I got to ask you, Bill, speaking of the financial market and how to make money quick, mm-hmm. I want to bring up the subject of cryptocurrency because it's really mm-hmm. been, it's funny how it went from a fringe currency to now it's become more of a mainstream currency to also becoming the unmarked currency of crime.
Yeah, that's right.
It's really a currency that, at one time, you had to have a bulk of it, or you could only buy it in bulk, to the point where criminals are now using it and breaking it down into small bits and really using it as the currency to create dastardly crime.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Talk to me a little bit about how the lack of regulation with cryptocurrency makes it easier for criminals to move around in silence.
That's a wonderful topic and a great question. I appreciate you asking that because it is in its fledgling state. God only knows where it's going to go from here. But what happens is websites, they promise huge returns if you invest in crypto with the company, not necessarily U.S. dollars. Or you might see an ad where celebrities are offering investment opportunities with a virtual currency. Or you read about Eric Adams, the new mayor of New York City, who wants all his compensation in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, it's really capturing people's imaginations. There's also a lot of online love interests. They're asking for financial help. If only you can send me some cryptocurrency or invest in crypto with them. Even Medicare plans, which is very popular every year, running up through October, November, December. Some companies, they sound legitimate. They sound like the real McCoys, but they're asking for payment in crypto. Well, the crypto is delivered to them, and it's over. It's over. There's very little tracing that a person can do. So I'm very, very skeptical of that. Now, listen. Crypto interesting opportunity for the right type of person, for the person who wants to limit their investments in a Bitcoin or Ethereum or so many of the thousands of little companies that are coming along. They're still squarely in the category of speculative. And if you invest $1,000 or $10,000, I always caution people, you must be prepared to lose $1,000 or $10,000. Be so careful. Should you invest in it? That's up to you. That's up to you. It's a speculation. And it's going to be speculative, in my opinion, for quite some time. And it's something you mentioned earlier, you know, rates at the bank in your savings account, they're 0.02%. And inflation is, you know, according to the CPI index, is scheduled at about 7%. That's a big chasm between 0.02 and 7%. So people are looking for a better return on their money. And they see these huge upswings in Bitcoin. That's the primary one. And they say, huh, if only I take my secure savings, only generating 0.02, and put it into Bitcoin, maybe I can make 50% or 100%. God only knows. So very enticing, very scary. Be very cautious when people want you to pay in crypto. Very cautious.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in this show, I keep referencing Black Market on Vice. Michael K. Williams was going around and they were showing how criminals convert your information into these pieces that essentially work as credit cards. And then they take and turn that into essentially money or credit, and then turn that credit to Bitcoin. And then it's untraceable. And they say from there, you can buy drugs, you can buy women, you can buy whatever you want.
Very frightening.
Yeah. You can buy.
I'm glad you referenced this because this is something that I think most people are, you know, they're cognizant of these issues and the speculative nature of the cryptocurrencies. But it sure helps to remind people that when you think crypto, think speculation.
Yeah, yeah, and it was absolutely frightening. I mean, the fact that you just created a new doorway, mind you created an opportunity with cryptocurrency, but with opportunity comes the opportunity to completely transform that into an evil opportunity, for lack of a better term, to corrupt it from, you know, to turn that apple and make it rotten at its core.
Good point.
And I'm not trying to create hyperbole here. I just, you know, there's always in someone's evil mind, there's always a way to spin that to their wants and needs.
It's unfortunate, but it is a fact of life.
It is. It is. And it was absolutely chilling to see what they were doing. There's one guy who actually in the streets of New York, in the streets of Brooklyn, all he does is and you can actually do this if you have a Cash App yourself. You can buy Bitcoin, turn around and resell in the street. That's how easy it is to deal Bitcoin. So let's say, Bill, I'm a Bitcoin reseller. Okay, so. Okay. Bill wants to buy a small amount of Bitcoin and I'm a Bitcoin dealer. He comes to me and says, I want to buy $100 worth of Bitcoin. And I say, I'll do it for 120 or I'll do it for 150. So Bill buys $100 worth of Bitcoin for me. I make 150 off of it. I just made $50 for the day. Now there's nothing illegal about that. It's two people doing a business transaction. Where it becomes illegal is if Bill takes that 150 and say we're in New York and he turns around and buys an illegal gun, or if he takes that 150 and he applies it to the drug trade, or he takes that 150 and he applies it to something else, that's where it becomes illegal. But this guy who deals in Bitcoin was talking about how he doesn't care what those people do with that, but he has been held up before. Like he's been, you know, he's had guns to his face and he's had his money taken and he knows he deals with people who are bad people, but he stays in the game because he knows the money's good.
Ooh, scary stuff.
It is. That it's that type of stuff that you go, wow, you know, there's definitely a criminal underbelly to stuff like that. And yeah. You know, that in itself is absolutely chilling. You mentioned before, and this is something that you had a brilliant answer to, and it was tech support scams. And mm-hmm. you said, you know, with elderly people, it was, I'm going to call, you know, just call my son and he'll take care of it. But somebody my age, who's a Gen Xer, you can't mm-hmm. exactly call, you know, call my nephew or call my son, he'll deal with it. I want to get a little bit more into that, because there are obviously reputable people you can call to get tech support in reputable businesses. It's yeah. getting harder and harder, though, with phone calls and online support, because, you know, you can deal with a reputable person who would kind of come in the back door. And you know this from dealing with technology. I think we've all had this at one time or another. Someone's got to come in through the back door of your computer and sometimes can do remote or mobile fixing of your computer. I think we've yeah. all sat here, and I've even done it with my editing program with Adobe Audition. I've had a representative from Adobe come in remotely and fix my editing program. I know that's sure. got to scare people a little bit too. And I'm leading to a very specific point here, Bill. So bear with me here for a second.
Sure.
And that is how open we are with our routers, our firewalls, our protection that we have with our routers in letting people in through our firewalls. I know that in the different methods that we've talked about today, it takes just one slip. Slip in order for someone to get into our systems and knock that down. And
right.
even with tech support scams, you can get it. You know, you may be having an issue with your computer. You may say, oh, my computer's lagging. Something's not working right. And you may be in need of tech support. And you reach out to what you think is the right company, and you get the wrong company, and all of a sudden they're mm-hmm. in your computer.
Right.
Right. You know, it makes for a little bit of more of a challenge. Is there a way that you know of to differentiate between a legit company and a non-legit company?
The one glaring way is if someone reaches out to you via email and says, your system has been corrupted, we on the Microsoft team, for instance, or the Apple team are here to help you, you know, respond and we will help correct the ailment that plagues your current computer. No, we're not going to respond. Or again, we're going to Google, what the heck? Or we're going to contact Microsoft or Apple directly and say, hey, did you people call me? Did you reach out to me? Do you know anything about my computer? And they're going to say, no, we did not. It's a scam. Just send it to junk. Don't even respond. If you, as a user, reach out to a company to help you with that issue, I'm feeling much, much better about it, because you're in control and you can find out who might be reputable in your geographic region or with Microsoft themselves. I would always go to the provider, Microsoft or Apple, for instance, directly and say, hey, I have a situation. What do you recommend doing? If they can't fix it, perhaps they can help you find someone who can help, can fix it. But you're right. Once they're inside your firewall, once they are inside your computer, they can wreak a whole lot of damage there, and it's not fun.
Yeah. Last one I want to bring up today, Bill, is one I think most people can get sucked into. And you've mentioned it a little bit, especially with the elderly, but I think anybody at any time of life can get sucked into, and that's romantic scams. Or somebody just being at their loneliest point or looking for
yeah.
something in life. I think it tends to happen more on social media than it does anywhere else.
Yes.
But it's the fact that someone reaches out to someone and starts flirting or whatnot, and then it's the, you know, I really need help with this. And like you mentioned before, it happens maybe in the form of gift cards or something else. Talk to me a little bit as to why we're so, again, trusting or wanting to trust somebody on the other end of social media or a computer or
yeah.
an app, and why we're wanting to so trust somebody on the other end of that versus somebody in a bar.
You know, it's not just men. We would think that guys, you know, I'm a guy, I'm a sucker, and I can be more easily enticed. That's not the situation whatsoever. There was a mother-daughter team, I believe they were either Kentucky or Tennessee, and they would pray, and that is the operative word, on troops, U.S. troops serving overseas. They would connect on social media, and they would lie through their teeth and send, you know, flattering photographs of not them, somebody else who's far more attractive, perhaps. How you doing? You know, thank you for your service. We support you. Tell me a little bit about yourself. And the poor GI serving in Korea or Germany or Afghanistan is lonely. And, oh, my goodness, look at this beautiful woman who's paying me some attention. And they respond. And the communication escalates. And it's, geez, I've got some R&R. I'm going to be in Honolulu. Wouldn't it be great if you could join? Well, I'd love to join you. Oh, I would so much love to spend one-on-one time with you. I don't have the money for that. Or please fly me to Germany, and the plane ticket is $1,400. Send it to me, and I'll be there. Again, it's preying upon our most sensitive vulnerabilities. We're lonely. We're by ourselves. Everybody wants to be loved. This is one of the AARP and FBI's chief scams year after year. The bad guys know that. The bad men and women, they know that. They know that this is an easy mark. This is a target, because they are working on our sensitivities, our emotions. And we are making decisions with our emotions. We want this to be true. You see the photograph of the young man or the young woman, they're very attractive, and you go, what? I could be friends or more with this beautiful person? Geez, sign me up. Oh, $1,400 checks. I've got that in the checking account. I'm gonna send it to him. I'm going to buy him. Tim, this is a very sad scenario, but it happens. It's happening right now.
Yeah.
Somewhere in America, someone's getting scammed with romance. And it's not necessarily older Americans. It could be Gen X's or millennials that are being scammed as well. But I'm glad you referenced that. It's very disturbing.
Yeah, and it's sad, too. I mean, anybody who watches any number amount of Dr. Phil episodes can tune in and see the ones who have been scammed by onliners from any amount of countries, and just feel yeah. bad for the person who's on there. And he doesn't do it to ridicule the people who have been scammed.
Yeah.
You know, he does it to kind of wake them up and say, hey, you know what, it's not your fault. You know, you're lonely, and you want somebody to love, and it just so happens Amen. That you've been preyed upon, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. The book is The Madoffs Among Us, Combat the Scammers, Con Artists, and Thieves Who Are Plotting to Steal Your Money. It's available right now on Amazon, one of those reputable companies that Bill was talking to us about. The guest is William Francavilla, and that's the name you should look for. You don't really have to look that hard. The link is available in the description of the show, and we'll make sure that you see it quite clearly in the description of the show, so you can get out there and order the book. It's quite a fascinating book, and you should take a look at it. And be armed, be prepared as to what you can expect out there in the online world and in the physical world. We really didn't even talk about porch pirates, but that kind of goes along with everything else. And just real quick before we leave, Bill, we should tell people, too, to kind of beware of Facebook Marketplace. Not that we're trying to pile on Facebook in this program, but Facebook Marketplace is kind of the dumping ground for a lot of stolen merchandise.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. It is. And again, my counsel to all of our listeners today is check it out. Check it out. Go to Google the name of the company that is representing or the company that is trying to sell and check it out. See what other people say about it. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's a really good line of first defense. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, a lot of recently, a lot of stories on the news about people who will go to retail outlets. They'll take stolen credit cards. They'll charge merchandise. Then they'll dump it on Facebook Marketplace. A lot of things like that too. So you have to, you know, buyer beware when you buy stuff on open markets like that, either eBay or Facebook Marketplace, things like that.
Yeah.
If you're getting it for too cheap, you might want to ask why you're getting it for too cheap.
Good question.
That's yeah, exactly. Again, the book is The Madoffs Among Us: Combat the Scammers, Con Artists, and Thieves Who Are Plotting to Steal Your Money. William Francavilla is our guest and the author of that book. Bill, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation, and best of luck to you, Tim, on your very fine show, and best of luck to all of your listeners. Buyer beware.
Exactly. Thank you very much. And folks, it's that time once again where if you are a regular subscriber to the show or the free version of the show, we must bid you adieu. If you are a subscriber to the premium version of True Crime Tuesday, it's time now for Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminals.
It's Crayon News Story Time.
What happened with this dude, Christ Bearer? I heard he cut his penis off and then jumped off a balcony.
Suspect pulls gun from butt, shoots twice at Denver police.
What is your emergency?
I need help.
And what's the problem?
I'm too high.
You're too high?
Yeah.
All right, folks, it's time once again for Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminals. We're going to start it off a little rough, and then we're going to end with food, in a way, on today's edition of Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminals. We'll start out with the state of Washington. And this is kind of an odd story. You know, some odd things happen with the school bus these days, and this one happens to do with a woman who just couldn't take it anymore when it came to the school bus. A 44-year-old woman is accused of assaulting a child who was waiting at a bus stop in Washington, according to police. The woman approached the 12-year-old girl in the Yesler Terrace neighborhood on January 25th, the Seattle Police Department said in a news release. After yelling at the girl and striking her with a plastic water bottle three times, police said the woman followed the girl onto the bus. Okay, that's unusual. She then spat on the 58-year-old driver before grabbing the bus keys and running off, according to police. Police then arrested the woman a few blocks away from the incident and booked her into the King County Jail on multiple counts of assault and vehicle theft. Odd, just plain odd. That is the quintessential dictionary version of a dumb criminal. Not to mention a dumb crime. This next one is just plain weird. A TikTok cosplayer killed a friend while pretending to be a Batman villain. You know, I love comic books as much as the next middle-aged geek does, but never in my life have I ever thought about taking it this far. According to a police report and an audio statement, cosplaying TikToker Yandera Freak, or it's Yandera.freak, you got to get it right if you're going to look it up, was playing with a loaded gun and shot a friend in the head. It's a little disturbing. A TikTok cosplayer with 1.6 million followers was charged with manslaughter after allegedly shooting her friend in a terrible drunken incident in January while likening herself to Batman villain Penguin. Huh. Most women go for Harley Quinn. I don't know that Penguin is the one you should go for. Since being released on bail, Mary Ann Oliver Snow, who goes by the name Yandera Freak, I'll spell it for you, Y-N-D-E-R-E, Y-N-D-E-R-E. I think it's Yandere or Yandere Freak. On TikTok has continued to post cosplay videos, including some that use fake blood. According to court filings and a police report, Oliver Snow did then and there unlawfully, recklessly cause the death of Helen Rose Hastings by pointing a handgun at the complainant and pulling the trigger. The incident was first reported by Dextero. There were six witnesses, according to a police report, and Oliver Snow gave an audio statement at the time admitting that she shot her friend. Oliver Snow is not identified as the Andera Freak in the police report, but the police report mentions that she's a cosplayer and also lists her date of birth, which matches a Facebook page belonging to her. Images posted on that Facebook show cosplays that match those posted by Yandere Freak on Instagram and TikTok. A mugshot of Oliver Snow obtained by Motherboard shows Oliver Snow as the same person who posts as Yandere Freak on Instagram and TikTok. The shooting occurred at 1:30 a.m. on January 17th in Houston, Texas. According to a Harris County police report, Oliver Snow was drinking and smoking with friends and playing around with a handgun an ex-boyfriend had left her at the home. The defendant stated her ex-boyfriend left his gun at her residence when he moved out, stating he took all of the bullets, the report said. The defendant stated that she did not know there was a bullet in it, stating that she has played with it before as a joke. The defendant stated her ex-boyfriend has shown her how to take out the bottom part, referring to the magazine, so it would not shoot. According to Oliver Snow and multiple witnesses, Hastings approached Oliver Snow and told her to shoot. "Ooh, shoot me." As they were laughing, the defendant said, "Oh, okay," and said it went off, saying she was in shock, saying it was supposed to be empty, according to the police report. The cops asked Oliver Snow why she had a gun out in the first place. She said they were watching Gotham, and she said she was drunk, laughing, messing around, saying she was a cosplayer, stating they like characters and stuff, and told her friend she had a gun just like the Penguin does. The cops asked one of the witnesses why Oliver Snow would put a gun up to someone's head. Alyssa, one of the witnesses present, stated because their friend group is wild, dumb, and does jokes like that all the time, which is absolutely insane. Another witness said she moved the gun away from Oliver Snow after the shooting, then got a large red and white stuffed bear and used it to compress pressure onto the complainant, making sure the complainant was still breathing, leaning over to listen to her heartbeat. The group immediately called the police, who arrived on the scene. Hastings was taken to the hospital, but her parents took her off life support soon after she arrived, and she died, according to that police report. Court papers filed on January 21st, just days after the killing, shows that Oliver Snow was released on $20,000 bond and ordered to stay in the state. The person who paid for the bond is unknown. Court records also indicate that Oliver Snow violated the terms of her bond throughout August. She missed a pretrial date related to the case, violated curfew, and allowed the battery on a GPS tracking device to die. Interesting. Interesting stuff. Well, I've told you people time and time again that I don't trust robots. And now another reason not to trust robots, at least the Boston Dynamic kind, is because now police are outsourcing human interaction with homeless people to Boston Dynamics robot dog. Okay, first of all, we got to take a small time out here. You already have people on the street that are not trusting other people. And now, and some of them may be, you know, involved in drugs, and others may have mental illness. And now you're going to send a robot dog up to talk to them. Not a good idea. I'm just saying it's probably not the best idea Honolulu police have ever had. But Honolulu PD's $150,000 Boston Dynamics robot dog is doing the hard work of taking temperatures at one of Hawaii's several outdoor homeless shelters. You heard that right. Despite pushback from the community, as it probably should be, cops in Honolulu are using a $150,000 robot dog to take the temperatures of homeless people. According to a training document and deployment log obtained via a records request, Boston Dynamics dog-like Spot Robot has largely been doing what Honolulu Police Department promised it would, the noble work of an $11 thermometer. It'd probably just be easier to go up and just point the little gun right at the forehead. You know, the little thermometer gun? You don't have to touch anybody. I swear. Honolulu's police department first drew national media attention when Civil Beat reported it had spent $150,045 in federal funds earmarked for pandemic relief on spot. At a presentation to City Council last year, Honolulu PD explained that Spot would be used to patrol the Kihei Lagoon Beach Park homeless encampment in the city, and more specifically would be used to take the temperatures of unhoused people living in encampments as an initial COVID-19 screening. This means that people living in the encampment would have regular initial screenings, not with a human, but with a dog-shaped robot under the guise of keeping cops safe from homeless people who potentially had COVID-19. Interesting use of a robot dog, we'll just say. As far as law enforcement goes, I would be so bold as to say it's the most innovative program in the nation, said Officer Mike Lambert of the Honolulu PD. He said that during a city council meeting. And during the pandemic, no one has ever heard of another law enforcement agency trying to provide shelter and overnight services for the unsheltered. In the months that initial city council of that initial city council meeting, Spot usage log obtained by Motherboard using a public records request show that Spot is indeed regularly being deployed on temperature duty and is often being used on something noted as dinner duty. Honolulu PD did not respond to a request for comment. I wonder what dinner duty is. Does Spot go out and get dinner for you? I wonder if there's coffee and donuts duty too. That'd be kind of fun. According to Lambert's presentation, the $150,000 robot could potentially save the police department thousands of dollars a day. His $90 estimate of cost savings put the number somewhere between $117,000 and $242,760. He based this number seemingly on what he would have to pay an officer to take the temperatures, and also built in an estimate of what he'd have to pay an officer to quarantine for 14 days should they be exposed to COVID while taking temperatures. According to activity logs from September, October, and November of 2021, Spot occasionally lost signal and couldn't be deployed. Some days it wouldn't deploy with only the word weather written in the notes column. So evidently the weather took out Spot. Motherboard checked the weather in Honolulu on these days and it was raining, although it rains in Honolulu most days. So evidently a little bit of rain can take out Spot. So there's still hope for us to take out Skynet yet. We just have to wait for a rainy day. There you go on that one. We move on where a drug suspect claimed a bag of syringes was for fishing. Now, I've used a lot of stuff for fishing in my day. My dad would take me out occasionally when he wanted me to shut up. He put me in a boat. We'd go floating out there on the lake, maybe Mille Lacs Lake, where you really don't float. You kind of bob up and down and get seasick for a while. And he'd say, son, hand me the daredevil jig. And I never knew what a daredevil jig was. I just knew it was that red and white thing that had hooks in it. Or he'd say, hand me this jig, or hand me that, or hand me a minnow, or hand me a worm. But never said, son, hand me a bag of hypodermic needles, because that never works. At least I don't think it does. But this suspect, the drug suspect, was found with fentanyl in a bag of hypodermic needles and told Florida police that he uses syringes for fishing. Evidently, it's whatever's in the syringes that gets the fish aboard your boat. I guess that's what it is. Police responding Saturday afternoon to a 911 call about a suspicious person encountered 30-year-old Eric Bennett on a Vero Beach street. An officer described Bennett as visibly intoxicated on an unknown substance. That's generally how you are when you walk that way. Asked about large bulges in his pockets of his shorts, he said, you're just happy to see me. No, wait, it's the other way around. No, he didn't say that. And whether he possessed any weapons, Bennett's reply was, I have hypodermic needles for fishing. It's probably not the best response. Mine was probably better. He then removed a plastic bag with syringes inside from a pocket and placed the works on the hood of a squad car. Oh, you're so busted, dude. So busted. Bennett also handed over a cigarette pack containing a baggie with fentanyl, strike number two, and then said, I don't want to go to jail. Well, guess what, dude? You're going. Bennett, whose occupation is listed as landscaping in court records, was pretty much screwed at that point. The Vero Beach resident was arrested on a felony narcotics possession charge and booked into the county jail, where he's being held in lieu of $7,500 bond. Bennett, who is scheduled to be arraigned on February 25th, has prior convictions for grand theft, DUI, driving without a license, possession of drug paraphernalia, and probation violation. When arrested on January 22nd, Bennett was not carrying any fishing equipment. Surprise! Evidently, he was spearing. Get it? You just take the syringe and you throw it in the water, and then it's kind of like playing darts. Nor did he expound on his purported use of tiny spears to impale a big catch. You can't catch a marlin with a syringe. I don't know if you've ever tried it before, but you're not going to get that done. That ain't happening. This next story is very much a dumb criminal story. It's a stupid crime. It is not funny in the least. I'm not even going to pretend to laugh at this. It's horrific. So bear with me as we get through this. A mom was charged with attempted murder after dropping her daughter, who was all of 3 years old, into a zoo's bear pit. I'm telling you, the video of this is absolutely shocking. It captures the moment that a three-year-old girl was dropped into a bear pit in a zoo in Uzbekistan by her mother, who's being investigated for attempted murder. The distressing footage from Tashkent shows the child being dropped into a trench about 16 feet below the railing as the hulking bear named Zuzu walks by and sniffs the child. Zookeepers manage to lure the beast into an enclosed part of the area before rushing to rescue the little girl, who suffered a concussion and cuts from the fall. The mother has been detained and faces a criminal case for attempted murder. She could be and should be sentenced to 15 years behind bars if convicted of the harrowing crime. A young woman threw a little girl down into a brown bear's enclosure in front of all the visitors. It was completely unclear what her motive was, a zoo spokeswoman went on to say. And I'm looking at some of the video and the pictures, and it's actually very horrific. Both the visitors and the staff of the zoo were trying to stop her, but failed, she said, the zoo spokeswoman. We are scared to even think how this would end if the bear were to react at the toddler as its prey. Yikes. The spokeswoman also added, Zuzu got slowly stood up, slowly got down the trench, walked towards the girl, sniffed her, and walked back. All I got to say is thank God for that. The girl was safe with the exception of that concussion that she suffered. So, but that woman is up and looking at 15 years in jail. I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but there was a story out last week that Michael Rappaport, the actor and comedian, who's based in New York, posted an online video from his local Rite Aid on the Upper East Side of New York. And it's an interesting video. It's up on TMZ.com if you want to see it. And he's standing in the Rite Aid and he's following this guy around who's shoplifting off of different shelves in the Rite Aid. And he's stuffing two bags full of just different things off the shelf. And it's just bizarre because Rappaport's doing commentary, play-by-play commentary. Oh, he's taking this and putting it in his bag. Oh, he's taking that and putting it in his bag. And it's like Christmas in here. And he follows the guy to the door. And there's a security guard standing there, right with the metal detectors right by the door. And the guy walks through the door. And he says, are you going to do anything, to the security guard? And it's almost like he just kind of waves the guy through. And now, understandably, he does this because Rite Aid can be held accountable if anything happens in some sort of physical altercation. So a lot of times, a lot of these stores will not confront a shoplifter with the idea that there's liability there. If someone gets hurt, if someone gets shot, a lot of times they'll tell employees, you know what, we can write off the merchandise, just let them go. Well, there's an update to that story. If you happen to see it, the store is closing down because of incessant shoplifting. Evidently, that wasn't the first time somebody had gone in and acted like it was Christmas. It's an update to the video that, and again, Rappaport has an Instagram you can watch it on. He's flipping out about that purported shoplifter brazenly walking out of the Manhattan Rite Aid with bags full of stolen goods. Rappaport says, and he has a podcast called I Am Rappaport. He says, back in my Rite Aid, and there's nothing to steal because this Rite Aid, like so many other Rite Aids, is closing down because everyone stole everything. He says that in a short clip from the podcast, showing aisles of shelves that are completely empty. Empty. The store is located at 80th Street and 1st Avenue, and it's closing February 15th, according to the actor. Rite Aid confirmed the closure to the New York Post, and the workers here don't know if they're getting jobs. Congratulations, losers, said Rappaport in his video. In his Instagram post last week, Rappaport said, I can't believe I'm seeing this shit. That was his quote. In his video, Rappaport said, the first one, he said, this effing guy just filled his two bags up with everything in Rite Aid right here on 80th Street and 1st Avenue, and he's walking down the street like shit is Gucci. That's what he said. I was watching him the whole time. That's from the original video. In the video, which has nearly 300,000 views, Rappaport followed the alleged thief as a man strolls past the security guard and walks out the front door. The quote is, my man just went Christmas shopping in January, Rappaport said as the man walked down the street. He tagged New York Mayor Eric Adams in the post at the time. Shoplifters made bold thefts at retail and grocery stores and have been making them and have been on the rise in recent months. Critics have blamed soft approaches to prosecutions that have emboldened people to commit low-level crimes. Theft of anything under $1,000 is considered a misdemeanor and is unlikely to result in any significant punishment. Most thefts are not even reported to police. The Rite Aid at the corner of 50th Street and 8th Avenue in Hell's Kitchen is set to close February 8th because of ceaseless thievery. Sources told the New York Post that thieves have run off with more than $200,000 worth of merchandise in the past 2 months alone. A New York Post reporter also followed a thief at the location as he packed four cases of beer into a canvas bag and walked out without incident. The thief told the Post right after he walked out, I know I do wrong. If they tell me to put it back, I'll put it back. Unbelievable. Store employee said the criminals come in sometimes twice a day with laundry bags and take what they please. They take whatever they want, and we can't do anything about it. It's why the store is closing. They can't afford to keep it open, the employee said. Rite Aid employees said they have been told not to engage with the thieves in any way. And there was security at the store that Rappaport was at, Michael Rappaport, and he watched him just walk through the door. It was the damnedest thing you've ever seen. Go look it up if you can. Either at TMZ.com or you can also see the video at his Instagram. He's also on Twitter at Michael Rappaport, spelled Rappaport. It is crazy stuff. I'll tell you that. It is just the wildest thing you've ever seen. I've never seen it in my life. Speaking of the system gone awry, and it, not that we're picking on the system today. That's not our aim at all, but a 90-year-old man has racked up speeding tickets thanks to a thief who stole his license plate, and it doesn't look like there's any stop to it. A 90-year-old veteran and retired jail official says he hasn't driven a car in New York City in half a decade, yet he's still racking up speeding tickets because of a scofflaw who stole his license plate. The guy's running around with my plate, and whatever happens, it comes back to me. I didn't do anything, fumed John J. Mifucci, who was a sailor during the Korean War. I'm at his mercy. I watch the mail every day thinking, oh God, what is he going to do today? Which has got to be absolutely terrifying. Mifucci's front license plate went missing after he struck a deer with his Honda in January of 2020, he said. Both he and a state trooper searched for plate BDX6081 and couldn't find it. So Mifucci got new license plates from the State Department of Motor Vehicles. The first speeding ticket showed up in the mail at his Westchester home about 16 months later. He reported the theft to state police, but the tickets, at least five so far, keep coming, said Mifucci, who contends no one in the city is bothering to check state records to see if those plates were lost or stolen. I don't think what happened is right, said his lawyer, Donald Lee Singer, who filed a lawsuit against the city with Mifucci's behalf or on his behalf in Manhattan Supreme Court. Mifucci has successfully beaten most of the tickets, but says one judge inexplicably found him guilty for speeding in the Tot Hill section of Staten Island in October. The last one, somebody found me guilty based upon what? You had all the evidence, he said. Mifucci has spent his life keeping tabs on the bad guys. He was a parole officer who worked his way up the state parole board in the 1980s. He also served as the Westchester County Commissioner of Corrections before spending decades as a private investigator, author, and screenwriter. But now he's the one handcuffed by bureaucracy. My God, he says, it's been so obvious what's going on. Somebody's been using a stolen plate and nobody's doing anything. God, I tell you, he says, none of these people would have worked for me. Not in a million years. If they did, they wouldn't last long. I don't blame you, Mr. Mifucci. I don't blame you at all. I can't believe that somebody hasn't caught on to this by now, or at least helped you out somehow to get all these tickets off your record. We got three stories left on Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals tonight. And boy, I'll tell you. We go to Philly, where if you're a pizza delivery man, you got to be tough. Because someone's going to take your pizza from you. Someone's going to take your money from you. Someone's just going to take your pride if you're delivering pizzas in Philly. We go to the Kensington neighborhood in Philly, where a pizza delivery man said, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. He tried to get carjacked. It was an attempted carjacking. I say attempted because the pizza delivery man fired out six shots at the carjacker when the attempt was made. That was last Thursday night. The 39-year-old pizza guy was delivering food on H Street just before 7:40 p.m. when an armed man approached him and tried to steal his car. Oh, no, you didn't. The pizza man, who had a concealed carry permit, drew his gun and blasted the 23-year-old attacker, cops told the station WPVI. The failed thief returned fire but didn't hit the victim. Man, I'll tell you, that's got to be an expensive pizza, or a damn good pizza at that, if people are shooting over your pizza. The would-be carjacker was driven to Temple University Hospital, where he was listed in critical condition, according to the station. So evidently, the pizza guy's a good shot. There have already been 90 carjackings, which is nothing compared to Minneapolis. In Philadelphia this year, as officials in the city of brotherly love ramp up patrols to fight a surge in vehicle crime. Last year, there were 757 carjackings, up from 404 in 2020. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, Thursday's shooting was the second time this month with a potential carjacking victim. When a potential carjacking victim flipped the script and opened fire on the person trying to steal the car. On January 14th, a 60-year-old man shot a 16-year-old in both legs after the teenager tried to take his car in the West Mount Airy neighborhood, according to the Inquirer. More than a dozen shots were exchanged when the botched theft turned violent, but the victim wasn't injured. The man was licensed to carry the weapon, didn't face any charges for shooting the teen, that according to the newspaper. I tell you what, I think in a future episode of True Crime Tuesday, we might tackle the carjacking epidemic, because across the nation right now, it is huge. Here in Minneapolis, our carjackings have gone up by four times the amount that it did last year. And four times above that from the prior year. And it's getting worse around the country. It's looked at as a quick and easy crime. Catalytic converters and the cost of the materials within catalytic converters has gone up exponentially. And it looks like the kids that are doing it are younger and younger. And a lot of gangs are into it. So we might do that as a future episode. It's kind of interesting. The different organizations that are into carjacking and getting your vehicle from you. And it's not just, it used to be, it was just luxury vehicles. It's not anymore. You can get jacked for your minivan. It's really strange. It's a strange world out there right now. Getting to be a more violent world too, which is very sad. All right. Our next two stories, I promised you, were food stories, and they come from Florida. So here we go. A man has been jailed on a ramen noodle battery charge, which would make a great band name. Ramen noodle battery charge. I know. A Florida woman was attacked following a dispute over a dog in bed. Oh, come on. How could you fight over a dog in bed? They're so cute. I mean, I know, I get it. Some people are like, I don't want dog here in my bed. I get that, but they're so cute. And they're warm, cuddly, and they like to cuddle. And you just can't get into a dispute about that, especially after a couple of nights. I mean, come on. It's cold outside. It's winter. A Florida man is behind bars after allegedly battering a female victim with hot ramen noodles. Yikes. Responding Friday morning to a domestic disturbance call at a Fort Pierce residence, sheriff's deputy spoke to a woman who said she was struck with noodles thrown by 21-year-old Brandon Smith, not the brightest bulb on the tree, following a dispute over allowing Smith's dog onto a bed. After Smith hit her with the noodles, the woman alleged, he struck her on the back with the hot pot. Ow! Sounds like an Al Green scenario. When questioned by cops, Smith said he woke up and began making a pot of ramen noodles. The victim, he claimed, was chasing the dog around when she fell atop the ramen noodles on the stove. Smith was arrested for domestic battery and booked into the St. Lucie County Jail, where he is being held in lieu of $5,000 bond on the misdemeanor count. In the past year, Smith has been convicted of cocaine possession, resisting police, and driving without a license. So I guess you're saying there's priors. Just saying. Finally, we stay in Florida, where a man was arrested at the Waffle House after an alleged outburst over bacon. And by gosh, if anything's going to make you burst out, it's going to be over bacon. It's a wonderful, wonderful food. I can't tell if it's a meat group, if it's a fruit group, if it's a vegetable. I think bacon covers it all. Just saying. A Florida man was arrested last Wednesday for allegedly causing a disturbance at a Cape Coral Waffle House over the way his bacon was cooked. Oh, now, okay. We may be in agreeance here. I don't know if agreeance is a word, but I'm making it one. The way your bacon is cooked could set your entire day either perfect or horribly, horribly wrong. I don't know about you, but I don't like it too crispy. I almost said cripsy. I don't like it too cripsy. Although I don't like it too flaccid either. It's got to be right kind of in the middle. It's got to have little crispy points, but it's still got to be a little limpy. I know this could be totally misconstrued if anybody walked in on us in the middle of this conversation. Martin Jose Alvarez was accused of yelling across the restaurant, "You better cook the effing bacon right." Well, he was right. Police said Alvarez was upset about how his bacon was delivered. The Tampa Free Press reported that Alvarez is accused of shouting, oh, this is too far, is shouting racial slurs at the workers and resisting officers until they threatened him with a taser. I'm not going to Taser Town over bacon. It's just not happening. We're not going there. The 28-year-old Alvarez, according to reports, is facing charges of disorderly intoxication, resisting an officer, and simple assault. He is currently being held at Lee County Jail. Well, you know, some people love their bacon enough to go to jail. And according to this, Mr. Alvarez is one of them. So there you go. That'll do it for Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals for another week. And I want to thank you all again for being subscribers to Stitcher Premium. Again, if you have stories that you want to submit for Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals, you could do that by emailing me at tim@darknessradio.com. And I appreciate you for doing so. Also, if you have guest ideas that you'd like to hear here on the show, it is tim@darknessradio.com. Thank you all so much for continuing to listen to True Crime Tuesday and Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals. If I haven't told you lately, I'll tell you once again, I appreciate you, and I appreciate you taking time out of your day to invest in the podcast and invest your precious time in the podcast. It truly is appreciated, and I want to say once again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Be sure you tune in tomorrow for more Darkness Radio. Tomorrow on Darkness Radio, it's Supernatural News. Thursday, we got a big treat for you. Brandon Elvis and Mustafa Gadolari, formerly of Ghost Hunters, will be on to talk about their brand new book, Elements of a Haunting. So there you go. You get the scoop before anybody else. We'll see you next week for another edition of True Crime Tuesday.